This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Good afternoon. This is Dr. Everett Piper from Oklahoma Wesleyan University in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, filling in for Tony Perkins this afternoon on Washington Watch with Family Research Council. April 28th, 2017, approximately 5:05 in the afternoon, Eastern Standard Time. Delighted to be with you. Remember that if you want to follow Tony Perkins on Twitter, it's T Perkins. That's at T Perkins. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it's Dr. Everett Piper. That's DrEverettPiper. Obviously, you can check up on the Family Research Council and all of its ministries, all of its writings, all of its blogs, all of its advocacy by going to the Family Research Council website. That's obvious. Just Google Family Research Council. Washington Watch, the blogs, the radio broadcasts, and all other services and information provided by Family Research Council is available there. Got a great show for you this afternoon, and I don't want to steal too much of our guests' time. So let's kick right off on the first segment here with Representative Warren Davidson from Ohio. Congressman Davidson is going to join us right now to talk about the Religious Liberty Executive Order that President Donald Trump promised that he would sign when he was on the campaign trail during the campaign season. Dozens of Republican lawmakers are asking the president to make good on this campaign promise and protect religious liberty. I obviously am very passionate about that as a Christian college educator because Oklahoma Wesleyan stands boldly and unapologetically for the truth of Christ and the truth of Scripture. My university believes that we should have the religious freedom to behave biblically and to expect our faculty, staff, and students to honor their contract that calls upon them to behave in such a way. I have told the federal government that I will not comply with the transgender mandate that I received from the Office of Civil Rights and the Department of Education, where they actually told me that as a Christian college, we still had to provide transgender accommodations to our students and to our faculty. In other words, give our female bathrooms over to any dysphoric male who on a given day raises his hand and says, "Today, I'm a woman." I said, "No, I won't do that. That is anti-woman. It's misogynistic. It's anti-feminism because it denies the feminine. It denies the female. And it's contrary to my religious freedom because as a biblically driven, biblically faithful institution, I should have the right and do have the right within my constitution to expect my community to live up to its missional integrity." Well, Congressman Davidson is on our side. He represents the 8th District of Ohio, Congressional District, and he's a member of the House Freedom Caucus. Excuse me. Congressman Davidson, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me on. Nice to talk with you.
Oh, delighted to have you. Now, President Trump told us he was going to sign this particular executive order. It is yet to be seen. Give us an update. Where are we on this right now? I know that you and, some 52 other Republican congressmen have asked the president to follow through and to live up to his word and fulfill his promise. But we also hear through the news, you can tell us whether it's right or wrong, that he has waffled on this and he's backing off and shelved the whole executive order idea because he's being influenced, perhaps by his own daughter Ivanka, to reconsider it because of the pro-LGBTQ left. Thoughts?
Yeah, you know, he made a lot of promises in the campaign, including some to the LGBTQ community, but he made an awful lot to religious folks, social conservatives, and it meant a lot to me, meant a lot to some of my colleagues, and think to the American people. And so you can see, just, you know, we can't get things through the court that are very clearly national security oriented. I think they're very mindful that whatever action he takes is likely to be challenged. And so from what I gather, they're being very methodical about some portions of this language so that we don't unintentionally set ourselves back in the courts. So whatever comes out is likely to be litigated. And so I do think that the president is a man of action, not just a guy of words. He certainly has spoken about it. But I'm anxious to see what comes out. And the tone of the letter was one that said, hey, you know, it meant a lot to us, and we're certainly here to help in any way we can. It was not confrontational or adversarial. It was more of a, How Can We Help letter.
And when was that letter issued? Give me the date again on that.
It was early April, and really we were trying to get it out in March, but we wanted to get over the 50 mark, so we pushed that, and we were kind of hoping to see it during Easter week, but you know, it'd be nice. We get the National Day of Prayer coming up this week. It'd be great to see it then, but getting it right is more important than hitting the date.
Now, are you hopeful? I'm reading between the lines in the tone of your response that you're still optimistic and hopeful. Am I reading you right, or do you want to?
You're dead on. I am optimistic. I'm very hopeful, and if necessary, I hope to be helpful. That was the tone of the letter.
Now, I know you've got Christian universities in Ohio that you obviously support and you believe in and you stand in alignment with. Cedarville, for example, I know Dr. White there personally. He and I stand arm in arm with regard to some of these issues that are being imposed upon the Evangelical Christian College. It seems absurd to me that I actually live in a day where I'm receiving letters from the Department of Education and the Office of Civil Rights that tell me that I have to deny the biological fact of the female, and I have to give my bathrooms, my sports programs, the facilities, the showers, the scholarships over to a dysphoric male who raises his hand on a given day and says, I'm a woman. Even though it's very clear, I would argue scientifically, if you believe in biology and physiology and genetics, as well as biblically, that women are real and that they should be honored and given dignity and given their privacy and given their rights accordingly. And Title IX itself demands that I do so. So I am caught between a rock and a hard place with a federal government that is using executive order under the Barack Obama administration telling me to violate a woman's right and deny that she exists and to violate my own First Amendment rights. But yet today I'm hopeful that we're going to get a reversal of that from the Trump administration. So it is a precarious point when I'm being told by the federal government, your constitutional rights of guaranteed rights of freedom of religion are subservient to this bureaucratic fiat and edict from the DOE.
Yeah, you're dead on there. National bathroom policy, for example, for just about every slice of education. And when you look at some of the other examples, you've got soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines that are wanting just chaplain services, and he's just applied, you know, his own views on marriage, not the ones he campaigned on, but the ones the post of Obergefell, that said, yeah, any contractor that doesn't agree with us, just as Hillary Clinton said in the campaign, you either agree with us or you change your doctrine, you know. And of course we're not going to do that. It's nonsensical, and that's a big part of why Hillary Clinton is not our president, thankfully. And so they're using, under Obama, he was using that to prevent the Army, for example, from contracting chaplains to come lead, you know, Catholic and evangelical services because their doctrine says we disagree with you on marriage.
You know, I think there's one senior White House official out there who has said that some sort of policy to protect religious liberty is still in the works. So he shares your optimism that you've already expressed, but that the president is trying to find some middle ground. I'm skeptical. Can that middle ground be found between two contradictory worldviews, one that says you must submit, you must comply, you must agree with this, otherwise you're unwelcome, i.e. Hillary Clinton that you just expressed, the other, which is more conservative and constitutional and says, indeed, we do all have these rights and they have to be protected and honored by an objective document called the Constitution that doesn't change?
Yeah, I think he'll look for middle ground, and here's an example. You know, Catholic Charities have been active, A, in opposing abortion, but B, in helping families adopt babies. And because of their doctrine, they will place babies only with married heterosexual couples. And under Obama, these groups aren't being allowed to renew their licenses to continue to adopt babies out. Well, to allow them to continue to place babies for adoption is consistent with faith, our doctrine, our beliefs. You know, we won't agree with the whole doctrine, but yes, of course you should be able to place babies with married heterosexual couples. But to say we're going to restore their right to do that doesn't have to say that we're going to somehow, by executive order, overturn Obergefell. So President Trump could very well be his personal position and the position of his executive order that he doesn't do as much as some folks would like and say, hey, we're going to restore marriage as one man and one woman. But he could say, but you know, you can keep doing gay adoptions, and you don't have to adopt your babies out to heterosexual couples, and then to people that have, you know, are practicing their faith, say, well, you can adopt babies wherever, because we're for babies getting adopted, having parents. That might be the ground we see. I don't know for sure that that'll be a fact, but those are the kind of compromises that would disappoint some folks, but certainly be progress from where we're at under Obama. So, you know, that's what I'm bracing for. I won't be enthusiastic about that, to be clear, but I will say that it is certainly better than what we would be looking at if we had a President Clinton. So, you know, that I think is the kind of middle ground that we might see. I don't know. I'm hopeful that we see a much stronger executive order than that.
What do you see a stronger, realistically, what could a stronger executive order include?
Well, you could, on marriage, I don't think he's going to be able to overturn that because of the court decision. But
fair enough.
You look at things like the Russell Amendment was on chaplains. That's one that, you know, we should see that. We should say, hey, we are going to keep contracting. We should see in federal contracting for example, we have a meat processing facility where the Department of Agriculture pulled their permitting and pulled their ability to do some of the work that they do simply because that business, in their private business, had published their views on marriage. And so, you know, that kind of stuff should, you know, the Department of Agriculture is not supposed to be the religious police, but under Obama they were doing these kinds of things. So I think we'll see that. I think on contraception, that's one where you'll see the case of the Little Sisters of the Poor. I hope that's a very strong piece of language that says, yeah, you don't have to be even a religiously affiliated organization. If you have a private business and it's your business and you decide you want to offer these things as part of your benefits as to your employees, then you can choose to do them or not choose to do them.
Federal one-size-fits-all
policy.
By the way, you're talking to a co-litigant in the Little Sisters of the Poor. Oklahoma Wesleyan University is one of the 32 organizations that filed in support of them, where we said a bunch of Catholic nuns that are celibate don't need any contraception, let alone that. call me stupid, but these women have vowed not to have sex. Why is the federal government telling them that they have to buy contraception in their health care? This is lunacy. We stepped forward. Yeah. We were co-litigants with them, and we said, and by the way, by definition, all of the employees of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, evangelical though they may be, are also pro-life. So why are you insulting the pro-life women at Oklahoma Wesleyan University by suggesting that they're too stupid to know what kind of drugs they want in their healthcare package? I'm sorry, I'm going to have to go. Thank you for joining us, Congressman. I appreciate you taking the time, and forgive me for my rant there at the end. Blessed to have you.
Getting the message out. Thank you.
Take care. This is Dr. Everett Piper sitting in for Tony Perkins here on Washington Watch. The call-in number is 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234. Coming up next, Missouri's Attorney General is cracking down on human trafficking. We'll be right back in a couple minutes.
Your mission is to find Granny and get that sauce.
Affirmative.
1 million moms, in association with American Family Studios, introduces Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent.
I'm Ryan DeFrady's. I work alone.
Ryan is arrogant and reckless until the day he's paired with a very unlikely partner.
No way! I can do this alone, without anyone's help, much less my mom's.
Look, Ryan.
She's my mom!
Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent is the new action-adventure series featuring a young spy with a whole lot to learn.
Mama's coming, sweetie!
She's an agent! Get her, boys!
Each exciting, fun-filled episode teaches children important values, like honoring parents and respecting authority. And there's a brief wrap-up at the end that connects the story to a biblical illustration. Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent. Perfect for children ages 6 and over. Pre-order your copy today at afastore.net.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. A number of years ago, I withdrew my membership from a church where I had been a member because the church and the denomination had taken a path that undermined the very Word of God. Note 1 Timothy 3:1. The concern was that if a church or denomination makes the Bible say something that it doesn't say, what will prevent that church or denomination from altering the Scripture in other ways, like the ordaining of homosexuals as pastors and/or the marrying of same-sex couples. We must put our trust in an unchanging God and His Word, not in man who falters in spirit, mind, and truth. As God's Word is altered, we make the truth a lie. If the church conforms to man's changing mores, men and women may one day be marrying their pets. Or are we already doing such craziness? What does God really say? God help us to know and to stand on it. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
8 Days of Hope 13 is headed to Lafayette, Louisiana, June 4th to June 11th. Hi, I'm Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. 8 Days of Hope is a faith-based ministry. We've gone all over the country to help families rebuild after natural disasters. We've helped almost 1,800 families rebuild their homes, sometimes from the ground up. Lafayette, Louisiana, and the whole state of Louisiana got hit by epic flooding last year in August. Almost 25 inches of rain fell, and almost $20 billion of damage was done. Literally 140,000 homes flooded. Think about that, 140,000 families waiting for somebody to be a glimpse of Jesus. You can be a skilled professional, or you can be somebody like me who's less skilled but wants to give back. Go to 8daysofhope.com. We provide the food and lodging, and you can learn a lot more about the ministry. And we can't wait to see you in Lafayette, Louisiana, June 4th to June 11th. For more information, go to 8daysofhope.com.
This is Dr. Everett Piper. Again, honored to be filling in for Tony Perkins, who's taking a break this afternoon, here on Washington Watch with the Family Research Council. The call-in number is 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. In the final 15 minutes of the show, I will be taking phone calls, and I welcome some dialogue with you. So remember that number, 866-372-7234. I'm waiting for the Attorney General, Josh Hawley, of Missouri, to join us. We're going to track him down here in a second. I think we just got a hold of him. So let me give a brief intro, and the Attorney General will be joining us. The Show Me State has much on its plate recently, and the Missouri Attorney General has outlined a plan to stop human trafficking, and Planned Parenthood plans to open several abortion clinics across the state. So this Attorney General, who aligns with us, at least most of you that are listening to the show, I assume, stands for traditional values, biblical worldview, the Constitution as it's written as a seminal document that is not a living document, but one that holds true as an objective reality over time. And he's announced several measures that he's going to implement to combat human trafficking in the state of Missouri. Attorney General Hawley, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much.
Honored to have you. I just had somebody that I believe you know. He served as Attorney General of the United States of America under the Bush administration. He spoke here. He spoke here on our campus just last week.
I think I know who you're talking about, and he is a hero of mine, and former Missouri Attorney General as well, and he is a fine public servant, and we need more like him.
Well, Attorney General John Ashcroft blessed us by coming and speaking in our chapel to our students at Oklahoma Wesleyan University, and I was honored to spend a few minutes with him for lunch afterwards. You have big shoes to fill there, but you have a great mentor and role model in Attorney General Ashcroft.
That's the truth.
Let me turn you loose. This is a short segment, so I want to turn you loose. What are you doing about human trafficking, and why?
Well, human trafficking is a nationwide epidemic, and I think it's so important that people realize that this is something that is happening in our neighborhoods, in our communities, in our churches, all across the country and in the state of Missouri. In the state of Missouri, for instance, The National Trafficking Hotline reports over 2,000 instances, reported instances of human trafficking in the last few years. Last year alone, we had 135 trafficking-related prosecutions. And this is a crime that is seriously under-prosecuted because it's just so hard to collect evidence for. So it's a nationwide epidemic. It's happening everywhere, and we are trying to take vigorous steps in Missouri to push back, to fight back. So I've announced a series of new initiatives. And perhaps the biggest one is we're using our consumer protection laws in the state of Missouri, and I've issued regulations that use consumer protection to go after traffickers and to target businesses that act as front for trafficking. We're the first state in the nation to use this approach. We're excited about it, and we're committed to doing everything we can to fight back against this form of modern-day slavery.
Who's pushing back against you, if anyone, and why?
Well, I mean, first, the traffickers certainly are, and they are not, traffickers are...
And who are they? Who are the traffickers? Identify
traffickers, sure. Traffickers are folks who coerce women, and this crime overwhelmingly involves women. Of the 4.5 million people trapped in sex slavery worldwide, 98% are female. And get this, the average age of entry into this crime, the average age at which young women are coerced or forced into this crime is 12 to 14 years of age.
It's Say that again. Say that again.
Yeah, average age of entry is 12 to 14. And it happens in all kinds of ways. The internet is a major, major source of it. So we have online predators who lure young women, promise them things. You know, they particularly tend to target young girls who are at risk in the foster care system from disadvantaged backgrounds, and they pretend to be their friends, or they promise them things, and they say, come and meet up with me, and then it turns out they're a trafficker, and they force them into the commercial sex industry, and then try and keep them there through one means or another as long as they can. And we're seeing this spread all over the country as the prevalence of the internet predators on the internet spread. So this is it's a major, major issue, and we are fighting back against it. And it's going to take an effort across the board. It's not just law enforcement. It's going to have to be churches. It's going to have to be all of us in our local communities standing up and saying, we're not going to have this. We want to protect our young women, and we want to see that our communities are places where people are safe and this kind of behavior is not welcome.
What do you say to the conservative church-going guy who goes to the Baptist Church in Springfield, Missouri, or the First Baptist Church of Sepulpa, Oklahoma, who says to you, oh, that must be going on someplace down in Dallas or Houston, but it's not going on in my backyard?
Yeah, well, I would say that Springfield, Missouri, for instance, we know that there are a series of businesses in Springfield alone that are front for trafficking rings. And this is something that is happening all over the state of Missouri, and it's happening all over the state of Oklahoma, I'm sure. Take St. Louis, Missouri, one of the top 10 cities for trafficking, depending on the measure, in the United States. And just in mid-Missouri, in rural Missouri, there was a major FBI bust, a trafficking bust, just 3 weeks ago. So it is prevalent. It is everywhere. And I think one of the things that we need folks to wake up to, and we need folks who are church-going folks to realize this. Number one, it is happening here. Number two, I've got to be deeply engaged with what my children, and especially my daughters, are looking at on the internet, who's talking to them at school, what's going on in their lives. And then also, we as believers have got to get deeply engaged in the effort to help those who have been victims of these crimes.
I think we probably got about 30 seconds here. Is it happening at the local truck stop out on I-70?
Yes. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. In truck stops, in rural areas, in motels, everywhere. And again, the gateway portal is often the internet. So my message to parents is engage with your children. Find out what they're looking at. Find out who they're talking to. Know who their friends and influences are. Play that active role. And then
Thank you.
Trained to recognize trafficking situations.
Thank you, Attorney General Hawley. I appreciate you joining us. Very important message. Blessings to you, and have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Dr. Everett Piper sitting in for Tony Perkins. Call in numbers 866-372-7234. We'll take a brief break and be back in about 60 seconds, maybe 2 minutes.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
We've got an awful lot going on in the economy, as we've seen this week. And, of course, we're finally looking at a House of Representatives that's back to work, though it's not going to be for long. But nonetheless, they are trying to do the best they can. In all likelihood, we will see solidifying continued resolution, which I absolutely despise. But that's a topic for another day. But we are seeing the markets feeling pretty confident right now. Business confidence is up, continuing to regain some of its optimism that it had just 2-3 months ago. Look, people are asking me now, should I be getting into the market? Is this the time to get in? Look, I said back in November that it was time to start getting in. If you partner with our ministry, I changed our asset allocation models back then, trying to encourage people to begin to gradually dollar cost average into the market. Look, yes, things are a lot higher now than they were back then. But nonetheless, if you are a long-term investor, if you are someone that says, I've got this money, whether it be IRA money or investment money, and I want to start putting it into the market, and I really have a very long-term time horizon, then I think it's fine to begin over the next 4 months to dollar cost average in. Now, if you do that, remember what I said. You have a long-term time horizon. So you cannot be fixated on a downturn that's going to last 6 weeks or 2 weeks or 6 months even. We've got to look at the broad economy and feel very good for where America's economy is headed and understand that's what you're investing in.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, sitting in for Tony Perkins this afternoon. The call-in number is 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. We're going to use this segment to set up the final half hour of the program. And I have with me Sterling Beard, who is with Campus Reform. You've heard the stories this last week. The most recent evidence of the Snowflake Rebellion and the student riots and protests on campuses across the land are coming in with Ann Coulter. Ann Coulter is the individual who has been terminated, if you will, and disinvited from Berkeley because she's not welcome, because her views are not welcome, and the students are protesting and saying that unless she agrees with us, she's verboten. We also have another story this week. It's just one of dozens where a student at a Northern Arizona university was told to stop reading his Bible before class. He was doing nothing other than sitting in a classroom before the class started. He was there relatively alone. The professor comes in, sees him with a Bible, tells him that he cannot read it in front of her. These stories go on and on and on. And the total loss of intellectual liberty at the hands of ideological fascism at today's universities is absurd. So I want to invite Sterling Beard on right now and join us. Sterling, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you for having me.
Well, what do you have to... Is there any hope? I'm a college president. I'm trying to confront this nonsense. I'm trying to suggest that it's the conservative who's actually trying to defend intellectual liberty today as opposed to the progressive left. Is there any hope out there, Sterling?
Well, I certainly think so. There has to be hope. There's always hope. But it's going to take the efforts of administrators such as yourself at schools like Oklahoma Wesleyan or, you know, concerned alumni and trustees to really enforce major change at a lot of these universities. So many universities, in my view, kind of operate as, you know, their own little hermit kingdoms. You know, nobody really seems to know what goes on there. The states, you know, have alleged oversight over them. But then you have universities like Cal Berkeley twisting off and creating an unwritten high-profile speakers policy that seems to apply only to, you know, conservative speakers on campus, when it wouldn't, say, apply to Vicente Fox, the former president of Mexico, which you can't have that. That is absolutely stifling intellectual diversity, and it's stifling freedom of speech on campus.
All right, I wrote a book a couple of years ago, and I titled it Why I'm a Liberal and Other Conservative Ideas, and I think you probably get it just from the title I just used. My argument was, as a conservative, I'm the classical liberal now because I believe in liberty and liberation and freedom and justice, and I believe in the words of Christ, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. And the progressive left wants to argue to shut me up rather than to release me, to engage in a debate and potentially prove me wrong. They don't even want to risk that.
It's because they lack the courage of their convictions. And that's what we see so much, you know, every day at the Leadership Institute's campusreform.org. We see this kind of unwillingness to even acknowledge that there are points of view. I want to say it was William F. Buckley who once famously remarked that the left always says they are about listening to other points of view and accepting other points of view or alternative points of view, and then are shocked when they're turned out to be alternative points of view. And you see that so much now where they try to shout down conservative speakers or get them disinvited or threaten violence at them. Even with Milo Yiannopoulos, who I'm sure you don't agree with just a whole heck of a lot on, I'm sure you think that he shouldn't have been chased from campus in February at UC Berkeley by those black-clad rioters setting fires to things.
You know, I was actually on a talk radio show, not as the host but as a guest, right after that happened. And it was a secular station. It wasn't Christian. And I said, I am about ready to invite Milo to speak at my campus just to prove that the conservative Christian is more open and gracious and engaging and willing to confront and debate and even argue than the progressive left. I would just like to prove it. Now, I didn't because I don't want to be perceived as sanctioning Milo's lifestyle. But I think my point is valid. He would be able to discuss, debate, and disagree on my campus more freely than he can at Berkeley. How ironic.
Absolutely ironic. And for another handy example of that, look at how Bernie Sanders was received at Liberty several months ago versus how how Milo, a gay man, was received at UC Berkeley.
Yeah. And the world is upside down. Again, Jerry Falwell and Liberty, gracious. Obviously, they don't agree with Bernie Sanders on a variety of things, almost everything. But they still allow his ideas to be expressed from their podium. And they can decide whether they agree or disagree and whose ideas win at the end of the day. It's not power. It's not politics. It's not the podium. It's not the pulpit. It's not the professor or the politician who should win. It should be truth. That's what the academy is supposed to be about.
Absolutely. And we've lost so much of that. I mean, the entire reason that campusreform.org exists is to expose liberal and progressive bias and abuse in higher education. In an ideal world, this website wouldn't exist at all. And I say that as somebody whose job is dependent on it. But the fact of the matter is you can run an entire website just cataloging all these abuses all across the country. And you're right, the end result is less intellectual diversity, less intellectual freedom. College students not getting a good education, getting wrapped up in their own emotions. You referred to snowflakes earlier.
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
I'm going to have to take a break here, Sterling. I'm getting the music. Good. But thank you so much. We need to give you more time. Maybe we can get you back on in a subsequent segment. Sterling Beard, the editor-in-chief with Campus Reform, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
The call-in number is 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. In the next segment, we're going to continue this conversation. I'll start out by reading an editorial I wrote this week called Bethlehem, Not Berkeley, is the birthplace of the free speech movement. We'll be right back in about 2 to 3 minutes.
Your mission is to find Granny and get that sauce.
Affirmative.
1 million moms, in association with American Family Studios, introduces Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent.
I'm Ryan DeFrady's. I work alone.
Ryan is arrogant and reckless until the day he's paired with a very unlikely partner.
No way! I can do this alone, without anyone's help, much less my mom's.
Look, Ryan.
She's my mom!
Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent is the new action-adventure series featuring a young spy with a whole lot to learn.
Mama's coming, sweetie!
She's an agent! Get her, boys!
Each exciting, fun-filled episode teaches children important values, like honoring parents and respecting authority. And there's a brief wrap-up at the end that connects the story to a biblical illustration. Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent.
Perfect for children ages 6 and over. Pre-order your copy today at afastore.net.
Consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
Join Norman Geisler, Richard Land, Michael Brown, Frank Turek, and others for Southern Evangelical Seminary's National Conference on Christian Apologetics. It's October 13th and 14th in Charlotte, North Carolina. Enjoy informative talks, a live debate, and a dialogue with Ken Ham from Answers in Genesis. Plus, there's the premiere of the American Family Association documentary, The God Who Speaks. Register by May 1st and receive a special gift. Visit ses.edu for details.
One of the many myths about abortion is that it's a private choice affecting only the woman who makes it. Hi, Kim Katola for Cradle My Heart Today. Nancy Valco knows that medical professionals are called on to make ethical decisions, which may put their professional lives on the line concerning abortion. As the leader of the National Association of Pro-Life Nurses, she serves as a resource for nurses whose conscience rights may be violated in the medical world. Nancy's pro-life ethic has developed thanks to her Christian faith, as well as her personal experience of losing three children, including an adult daughter to suicide, an infant who had a heart defect, and a child miscarried at 10 weeks. These losses strengthened Nancy's resolve to fight to preserve life through her nursing skills and now through public policy advocacy. Through it all, she remains determined to trust God and choose life. Find out more about Nancy's work at CradleMyHeart.org. Saving lives and healing hearts, one story at a time. CradleMyHeart.org.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan, sitting in for Tony Perkins this afternoon. In this last 15 minutes, we do want to take calls. I do want to take calls. I want this to be a dialogue. So the call-in number is 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. And any of the topics we've discussed thus far are open game. We can talk about this snowflake rebellion, the trigger warnings, the safe spaces, the lack of intellectual freedom that prevails on today's campuses at the hands of this ideological fascism. We can talk about that. We can talk about human trafficking and the sex slave trade that exists in your own backyard, probably at the truck stop that you drive by on a daily or weekly basis. We could also talk about the Restoring Religious Freedom Act and the call for the First Amendment rights that you and I are guaranteed to be preserved and protected. I would like to, I know I have one caller and I want him to hold for me, don't leave. I would like to start this particular segment by sharing with you an op-ed that I wrote for the Christian Post just 2 days ago. It's titled, Bethlehem, not Berkeley, is the birthplace of free speech. Here's what it says, and it's brief. It seems that hardly a day goes by when the call for safe spaces and speech codes is not headline news. Every week, there are too many stories to count of colleges and universities showing themselves to be more bastions of ideological fascism than bulwarks of intellectual liberty, where students and faculty alike seem to be more passionate about restricting debate than they are about defending the freedom to disagree. This week's victim of the Snowflake Rebellion is Ann Coulter, whose invitation to speak at the University of California, Berkeley was rescinded after student protests. And I'm not writing to affirm or refute Ann Coulter or her views. That's not my point. I'm writing to implore Berkeley Chancellor Nicholas Dirk and all other leaders of America's educational community, my peers, to remember our industry's rich history of the liberal arts. I'm writing to plead with my colleagues to stand firm for the Academy's millennia-old commitment to freedom of speech, freedom of expression, freedom of inquiry, and freedom of thought. I'm writing on behalf of liberty. I'm writing because I believe in classical liberalism. I'm writing because I believe in human freedom. I'm writing because I believe in truth. What in the world has happened to the ivory tower? Whatever became of the free exchange of ideas? Whatever happened to the value of a good argument? And when did the desire to learn become supplanted by the right to be affirmed? When did education become more interested in celebrating personal feelings than pursuing objective facts? The answer to the riots and rebellion that Berkeley and many other college campuses are facing is not found in the tyranny of false tolerance or the ideological safety of trigger warnings. It isn't found in more restrictions and more legalism. It isn't found in perpetuating victimization, violence, and vengeance. It is found in returning to the age-old mission of the Liberal Arts Academy, in veritas, in the pursuit of truth and its desired behavioral outcome, the practice of wisdom and the virtue of love. As C.S. Lewis told us in the Chronicles of Narnia, it is found in what is good, not in what is safe. Chancellor Dirks has stated that Berkeley is the home of the free speech movement. I would beg to differ. Human freedom, intellectual or otherwise, was not born in Berkeley, California, but rather in a community called Bethlehem some 2,000 years ago. The fundamental principles of higher education are grounded in the words of the Word, that truth that was made flesh and dwelling among us, in the Logos, in the eternal pre-existent alphabet, the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. The very freedom Dr. Dirks and all others of his ilk claim to hold so dear finds its home not at a campus near the sandy beaches of our West Coast, but rather in a stable under the stars in ancient Israel. Free speech at Berkeley, or anywhere else for that matter, has never been achieved outside the context of the foundational admonition, dare I say the biblical admonition, stated very succinctly in Berkeley's own founding motto. Berkeley's own founding motto, Fiat Lux, let there be light. Serious educators ought to be guided by the implied objectivity of that light, that quote-unquote light, by the immutable, not by the malleable, by the right, the just, and the true, not by the transient constructs of tolerance, trigger warnings, safe spaces, microaggressions, and whatever happens to be politically correct on a given day. As Oz Guinness has said, all truth is true even if no one believes it, and all falsehood is false even if everyone believes it. Truth is true, and that's just the end of it. The goal of the university, whether it be Berkeley or Baylor or Oklahoma State or Oklahoma Wesleyan, should be what is factual, not the newest fluid fad. Honesty demands it. Freedom demands that we boldly pursue ideas tested by time, defended by reason, validated by experience, and confirmed by revelation. We will only find truth when we place our confidence in it and not in ourselves. We will only learn when we love truth enough to measure all ideas with a measuring rod outside of those things being measured and are willing to discard those ideas that we find inferior and useless and, yes, intolerable. History has taught us time and again that political power always raises its angry fist when timeless principles are lost. And we know that without the scale of self-evident truths grounded in the laws of nature and nature's God, every culture eventually finds itself subject to the rule of the gang or the tyranny of the one. Recognizing this, scholars of all ages have confidently given their hearts and their minds to the words, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free." If the Berkeley protests prove anything, it is this. Free speech was not born on the coasts of California, but rather in a cradle in Canaan. Human freedom does not find its birthright in the academy, but rather in a humble cave. Dr. Dirks, as well as his students and his faculty, would do well to remember this and let Ann Coulter speak. Freedom is found in Bethlehem, not at Berkeley. Mitch from Missouri, are you with me?
Yes, I am, and thank you for your words. I thought that was very good.
Well, welcome to Washington Watch, Mitch. What can I do for you?
Thank you. I would just like to, being from Missouri, and I did vote for Attorney General Hawley, and I'm very, very thankful and happy to hear about the work that he's doing with human trafficking, or at least trying to, you know, do his best. It's something my wife and I have been praying about for probably 2 years specifically. And I'm just so thankful that we now have some leaders that are willing to, you know, step up to the call and be obedient and do the things that they're supposed to do. And what I'd like to do is encourage people when you see things like this we have a National Day of Prayer coming up next week on Thursday. As a matter of fact, my wife and I coordinated an event that's held at our local church on that day. And I just want to encourage people that these are the things that we need to be praying about, and never discount the power of prayer and the things that can happen that way. And I just wanted to, thank him and thank you all for the work that you do, and just put that out there. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Mitch, for calling in. And I'm going to paraphrase what I think I just heard Mitch said, and that is support those that you agree with. Don't be comfortable on your ranch or on your farm or in your condo. Your comfort doesn't matter today. You have to get out of your comfort zone, and you have to engage in the cultural debate. If you don't, others that you disagree with will. I was asked recently by a friend of mine from California who called me to bemoan what he feared was the slippery slope of progressivism in our culture. And he kept asking me, why is this happening? Why is this happening? And I kept telling him, I don't know. I'm not too sure why it's happening. A half hour later, while he was still asking me, it finally dawned on me. I think I know the answer. And I said to him, I said, Josh, here's what I think. The progressive left believes in their God. We don't believe in ours. And what do I mean by that? The progressive left believes that they are God. Their God is themselves. Their God is the human being. Their God is who they see in the mirror. And they believe passionately in their God. All they have to do is look at him in the mirror every morning. The progressive left believes in their God. Barack Obama, we are the ones we've been waiting for, and we are the change we seek. The progressive left believes in those words. They believe in their God passionately, and they're willing to get out of their comfort zone to champion their God. Are you willing to do the same? Do you believe in the Imago? Do you believe in, I started to say the Imago Dei, which is obviously wrong. Do you believe, not in the image of God that you see in the mirror, do you believe in the eternal, Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the end, the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, the Lion of Judah and the Lamb of God? Do you believe in that God, the eternal, only God, enough to get out of your comfort zone? Mitch, thank you for encouraging you. Mike from Oklahoma, welcome to Washington Watch.
How are you today?
I'm doing well, Mike. You know, I was once in Kansas. I was once in Kansas, and they welcomed me. They welcomed me to, they said, welcome to God's territory. Welcome to paradise. And I said, well, if Kansas is paradise and you're suggesting that Oklahoma is purgatory, who are our poor little brothers south of the Red River? Who are they? Anyway, it's good to have a fellow. It's good to have a fellow Okie on the program this afternoon. What can I do for you?
I'm only 17 miles from Bartlesville.
Oh, okay. What town are you
one
from?
One of the things you keep mentioning the truck stop thing. I've been a professional driver since 1991.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a lot of things changed since we got the reputation back then of doing this human trafficking or being a part of it. Most drivers nowadays see that kind of garbage in the truck stops. We call the law. Most truck stops nowadays, they got security. They got people that patrol the lots. I can only think of about three cities throughout this United States of America that's even really a problem in the truck stops anymore. They have really cleaned them up. So I'm kind of offended that you keep throwing out truck stops right down the street from you because it ain't there no more.
Well, thanks for calling in, Mike. I appreciate that. Let me make something really clear here. My dad's a truck driver. He drove for a local foundry in Hillsdale, Michigan for much of his life, and then he drove for another national chain for the remaining portion of his life. So I come from a truck-driving family. My dad told me stories that would affirm my concern. You might say that was long ago and that things have changed. Well, we've had gentlemen on our campus actually talking about human trafficking that takes place on I-35 corridor, and that the problem that exists on the interstates that intersect, I jokingly said earlier, I was poking fun at our little brother south of the Red River, Texas. Well, the corridor coming up out of Texas through Oklahoma into Kansas and dispersing across the entire United States is a human trafficking corridor. That is a fact. That is not fiction. That is not That is not make-believe. That is not just hypothetical, and it's not hyperbole. We need to realize that the truck drivers aren't. I'm not picking on truck drivers here. I'm not suggesting that truck drivers are at fault any more than academics or professors or politicians or preachers. What I'm suggesting is that human beings who believe in justice and believe that women should be shown dignity need to step forward and argue against this nonsense and help stop it. So, Mike, I appreciate the fact that you're defending the profession of truck drivers. My dad is one. But the fact of the matter that the corridors that crisscross our nation, whether they be in Missouri or whether they be in Oklahoma, are sex trafficking corridors is simply a fact. I'm sorry I missed the name of the next caller. Give me Brad from Alabama. Welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much. Just so you know, I am a native Texan, although I live in Alabama.
Well, sorry about my snarky remark about Texans.
We can handle it. We're big boys.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm a physician, 68 years old, and when I was in medical school, I delivered about 30, 35 babies. And every time I delivered a baby, I held it up and I said, oh, it's a boy or it's a girl. It was pretty obvious what I was dealing with. This age of gender fluidity just kind of is so ridiculous because I guess if the gender is that fluid, then everybody deserves to go to an OB-GYN, whether you're a male or a female. And of course, I think it's kind of ridiculous to say somebody to say, well, I want to be a female today and I'm pregnant, so I'm going to go to the gynecologist and get checked out and then deliver a baby. And that's about the logic that is being followed here when you apply it broadly. Basically, they're denying a biological reality that can't be denied. Period.
Brad, and you are a blessing. Thank you. Thank you for calling in and saying so succinctly, so logically, so intelligently what all of us should embrace. And the irony is that you and I are going to be called anti-science, and you're a scientist, you're a medical doctor, your degree is in science, you understand biology and physiology and genetics, you understand medicine, you are a medical doctor, you're an MD. The very first thing that's pronounced, as you just said, on any of us at the point of birth is what? It's a boy and it's a girl. It's a biological, physiological, genetic fact as to whether or not it's a boy or it's a girl. And now the conservative, predominantly Christians, are being accused of being anti-science. Well, who's really anti-science when it comes to this transgender argument? Is it Bruce Jenner who denies the biological genetic nature of who he is as a male? Or is it this doctor, Brad, that's called in and clarified that he believes in the objective reality of what sexual distinctions involve? The Christian, the conservative, is the one who believes in truth. The Christian, the conservative, can rest easy and enjoy the freedom that that truth grants us. When you deny those truths, you're held bondage to lies. You are not set free. And you're seeing it Berkeley, and you're seeing it in the scientific community, you're seeing it in the transgender argument. Truth sets us free. Lies and always lead to bondage. This is Dr. Everett Piper sitting in for Tony Perkins. Thank you for being patient with me today on Washington Watch. Have a great weekend, and remember, continue to fight the good fight. You know who's in the right.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.